Thank you, Brother Conley. Appreciate that for taking care of the song this morning. And we also welcome our Pathfinders. Pastor Hewitt is out sick this week, so we're just the people who are welcoming everybody in week after week while everyone else is sick. So it's good to have everybody here this morning. If you didn't get a handout, raise your hand. We want to make sure that you get one. And we just have a couple down here, Brother Collette. Sorry, I caught you off guard. And I think everybody else got one this morning. Very good. Very good. Everybody else okay? Awesome. We're going to be in Jeremiah chapter 40. Jeremiah chapter 40. We've been walking through the book of Jeremiah. And we're starting kind of a new section in the book. We're introducing a new era in the timeline. Now, remember, Jeremiah is not a particularly chronological book. It's more arranged by topic than it is by time. And you'll notice that it hops around the time, and every single story has a time stamp on it, but it hops around a lot because it's trying to connect ideas together. But because we're starting a new section, I don't have to review the whole book for us this morning. It suffices to say that Israel's been wicked. Jeremiah told them. They didn't want to hear it, but everything he told them would happen happened anyway. And the very last chapter we just read, chapter 39, Babylon, that they've been warning about. The wicked country of Babylon has come. They have taken Israel captive, and they have carried them away for the third time. The king, Zedekiah, he has been captured. His sons have been killed. His eyes have been put out. And all the people have been carried away. And so that's where we begin chapter 40. Chapter 40 through 44 is actually one continuous story, which is very brand new for Jeremiah, who likes to hop around a lot. So it's going to be easy to follow for the next couple weeks. But we're not going to finish the whole story, all those five chapters, because there's a lot that goes on. But it's all interconnected. So we're going to start this morning, and we're going to see the beginning of the story. We're going to read the beginning of chapter 40, where we ended last week, where the king of Babylon, who's carrying away all these people captive, he's putting them all in chains, he's taking all of their gold and all of their precious vessels from the temple, he's destroyed it all. He ends up turning to Jeremiah and says, Jeremiah, what do you want to do? Do you want to come? Do you want to stay? Do you want to go? What do you want to do? And so that is a real evidence in that whole section of the book, that while everyone else was trying to secure their own future their way, and Jeremiah was willing to do what God told him to do, regardless of what the cost was, at the end of the whole story, Jeremiah was the only one who won out because of it. Everyone else lost when they tried to secure their own future, and when Jeremiah obeyed, God took care of him. And so let's look back at that as we begin the story. So chapter 40, look at verse number 1. The word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord after that Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, had let him go from Ramah, when he had taken him being bound in chains among all that were carried away captive of Jerusalem and Judah, which were carried away captive unto Babylon. The captain of the guard took Jeremiah and said unto him, the Lord thy God hath pronounced this evil upon this place. Now the Lord hath brought it and done according as he hath said, because ye have sinned against the Lord and have not obeyed his voice, therefore this thing has come upon you. What an ironic thing that the captain of Babylon knows why Israel was destroyed, and Israel doesn't even seem to know. Verse 4, and now behold, I loose thee this day from the chains which were upon thine hand. If it seem good unto thee to come with me to Babylon, come, and I will look well to thee. If it seem ill unto thee to come with me to Babylon, forbear. Behold, all the land is before thee, whither it seemeth good and convenient for thee to go. So this new leader tells Jeremiah he can do whatever he wants. And so because Jeremiah followed the Lord, he was the only one who had liberty while everybody else was seeking liberty. Now, this is where the story continues from last week. So verse 5, while he was not yet gone back, he said, go back also to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, whom the king of Babylon hath made governor over the cities of Judah, and dwell with him among the people. Or go wherever it seemeth convenient to thee to go. So the captain of the guard gave him victuals and a reward and let him go. So we actually are a little bit more familiar with this guy than we might think we are. There is no king because there is no kingdom. Nobody's called a king anymore. But there are still a few leftover people in Israel to till the fields and harvest the vineyards and the poorest of the people behind. And so he does leave someone in charge, and he calls him a governor. He leaves a guy named Gedaliah in charge. He's the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan. Now remember, all the way back during the time of Josiah, Hilkiah the high priest and Shaphan the scribe found the book of the law in the temple. Earlier on in the book of Jeremiah, we met Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, who was the only one to stand up for Jeremiah and plead for his life when he was about to be executed by Jehoiakim. And now we have Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan. So this guy is somebody who we would expect to be Jeremiah's ally. He comes from a line of people who are close to Jeremiah and people who have seemed to be on Jeremiah's side. So we have some high hopes for the first leader to actually be thinking the same way as Jeremiah. And our hopes are actually in order because that's what Gedaliah does. So let's keep reading. Verse 6. Then went Jeremiah unto Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, to Mizpah, which is somewhere right about the middle of Israel. He dwelt with him among the people that were left in the land. And all the captains of the forces which were in the fields, even they and their men, heard that the king of Babylon had made Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, governor in the land, and had committed unto him men and women and children, and the poor of the land, of them that were not carried away captive to Babylon. When they heard this, then they came to Gedaliah to Mizpah. And these are the guys who came, even Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, and Johanan, the son of, and Jonathan, the sons of Kareah, and Sariah, the son of Tanhumeth, and the sons of Aphi, the Netophathite, and Jezaniah, the son of Maacathite, they and their men. Now, there's a lot of people in that list. The only people you really need to know are Ishmael and Johanan. They're going to be the main characters of the next couple chapters of the book. So all these guys here, Gedaliah has been made governor of Israel. And they all come and they meet with him. Gedaliah has a message for the people, this new leader. He stands up and he basically tells the people the same thing Jeremiah has been telling the people. So verse 9, Gedaliah the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, swear unto them and to their men, saying, fear not to serve the Chaldeans. Dwell on the land and serve the king of Babylon, and it shall be well with you. As for me, behold, I will dwell at Mizpah to serve the Chaldeans, which will come unto us. But ye, gather ye wine and summer fruits and oil and put them in your vessels and dwell in your cities that ye have taken. He says, guys, Babylon's in charge and they're gone and they're not coming back. Not anymore. So let's just live here. Let Babylon be in charge and it'll be well with us. So verse 11. Likewise, when all the Jews that were in Moab and among the Ammonites and in Edom and that were in all the countries heard the king of Babylon had left a remnant of Judah, and that he had set over Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, even all the Jews returned out of the places whither they were driven and came to the land of Judah, to Gedaliah, unto Mizpah, and gathered wine and summer fruits very much. So people from all over, Moab, Ammon, Edom, they all heard this new governor was in charge. Now, some of those men that came to see him, verse 13, wanted to warn Gedaliah about the problem. Moreover, Johanan, the son of Kareah, and all the captains of the forces that were in the fields, came to Gedaliah to Mizpah and said unto him, dost thou certainly know that Baalis, the king of the Ammonites, had sent Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, to slay thee? But Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, believed them not. So Johanan, the son of Kareah, spake to Gedaliah in Mizpah secretly, saying, let me go, I pray thee. I will slay Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, and no man shall know it. Wherefore should he slay thee, that all the Jews which are gathered unto thee should be scattered, and the remnant in Judah perish? But Gedaliah the son of Ahikam said unto Johanan the son of Kareah, thou shalt not do this thing, for thou speakest falsely of Ishmael. So that's the end of the first chapter. So two of the men come to Gedaliah. One of them says, a bunch of people come, and then one of them comes later and says, one of them is seeking your life. He's going to slay you. They have this whole plan to assassinate you. And he says, that's not true. He's fine. I know him. I know his mom. We're great. Everything's okay. Don't worry. You're just being really, you're just getting too worked up. It'll be fine. And he says, I'll go kill him so he doesn't kill you first. He says, don't do that. Let's just relax. Everything's okay. Well, there might be a lesson in that brief moment there. He was very optimistic. Maybe he should have, you know, expected the best and planned for the worst. I don't know. Regardless of that, that's not the point of the lesson. Because as we open chapter 41, we follow Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah. one of the men that came to Gedaliah, who's not happy that Gedaliah is in charge. So look at verse 1. What does he do? It came to pass in the seventh month that Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, the son of Elishama, of the seed royal, and of the princes of the king, even 10 men with him, came unto Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, to Mizpah, and there they did eat bread together in Mizpah. And then arose Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, and the 10 men that were with him, and they smote Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, with the sword, and slew him, whom the king of Babylon had made governor over the land. Ishmael also slew all the Jews that were with him, even with Gedaliah, at Mizpah, and the Chaldeans that were found there, and the men of war. So he gets everybody together. He tells them they're going to have dinner. And while they're all having dinner, he kills them, just like Johanan warned him would happen. Look at verse 4. It came to pass the second day after he had slain Gedaliah, no man knew it, there came certain from Shechem, certain people, from Shiloh, from Samaria, even 80 men, having their beards shaven and their clothes rent, and having cut themselves with offerings and incense in their hand to bring them to the house of the Lord. All these bad things that have been happening in the recent past, they're coming and they're mourning about all of this. Ishmael, verse 6, the son of Nethaniah went forth from Mizpah to meet them, weeping all along as he went. And so he's acting like he's feeling the same way they are. It came to pass, as he met them, he said unto them, come to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam. And he tells them that they're going to go meet with the governor, even though he's dead. And it was so, when they came into the midst of the city, that Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, slew them and cast them into the midst of a pit, he and the men that were with him. So he feigns mourning so that he gains their trust. They're going to go see the governor, and then on the way, he kills all these men too. Verse 8, but 10 men were found among them that said unto Ishmael, slay us not, for we have treasures in the field, wheat, barley, and oil, and honey. So he forbare and slew them not among their brethren. The pit wherein Ishmael had cast all the dead bodies of the men whom he had slain because of Gedaliah was it which Asa the king had made for fear of Baasha king of Israel. And Ishmael the son of Nethaniah filled it with them that were slain. Ishmael carried away captive all the residue of the people that were in Mizpah, even the king's daughters, all the people that remained in Mizpah, whom Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, had committed to Gedaliah the son of Ahikam. And Ishmael the son of Nethaniah carried them away captive and departed to go over to the Ammonites. I'm going to leave the last section for the end. But here, this is a very odd story. The nation of Israel was a kingdom, and generally together, they all wanted Israel's best. Of course, they wanted their best by doing things their own way. They lived in sin. They lived in wickedness. They lived in idolatry, spiritual adultery, he calls it at the beginning. They tried to mask it with all their religion and their rituals and their temple sacrifices, even though their hearts were not right. And yet Babylon comes anyway, despite all of their efforts to the contrary. The world still overtook them because they tried to live like the world, and so the world took them over. And here, we're finally at the first moment where Jeremiah is telling them, all right, guys, it's over. It's done. All the horrendous actions I have been telling you are going to take place are finished. Now, just live in the land, do right. Babylon's not coming back, and we can just move forward. And so the next couple chapters should be peaceful. But still you have this warring of the people within themselves, and you have Ishmael, who's rising up and killing people and trying to take charge and making a league with the Ammonites. What is he trying to do? And my point of the story this morning and the point of my message is that Ishmael, and that's we're going to focus on him, went off on his own path in an attempt to make things right. But he ruined his potential in his life when he chose to go off his own path, and so will we. Jeremiah, once again, was telling the people what to do, telling them exactly what God said. And this time, God told them to just do nothing. Okay? Relax. It's over. That wasn't good enough for them. They still had their own ideas. And the fact is, there is often a lot of reasons why we do the same thing. God tells us to live and to act and to obey a certain way, and we choose to do things our way. because we have our own idea of what's important. We have our own idea of what is right. We have our own idea of what the best path forward is. And so we end up getting off on our own way. And the fact is, that's often in the Bible considered to be a moral decision, not just a wisdom decision. All the way back in Jeremiah chapter 18, he says, all right, guys, walk in my path, do my word and obey my commandments. And they said, no, we will walk in our own path and we will do after the imagination of our own hearts. And that's really the decision that we all are faced with every day. Walk in my way or walk in your way. And we often choose to walk in our way. Now, we're not usually as blatant like they were in Jeremiah 18. No, we will walk after our own devices. But we do anyway, don't we? We still walk after our own devices. And the reason why is because we think we have enough wisdom to do so. I won't read it for sake of time because my message is longer than I thought that it was as I was looking at it this morning. But Ecclesiastes chapter 7, there's this whole section where he basically says this: man tries to find wisdom in himself, but he has none. He tries to seek out deep things, but it is not there for him to find. He does not have the wisdom that he needs, but the fact is God does. And so when we go off our way, because we do have our own ideas of what is important, we do have our own ideas of what is right, we do have our own ideas about the best path forward, when we trust that we know enough, instead of trust that Jeremiah is right and trust that God's word is correct, then we're going to end up ruining the potential that we could have for the future. And so our question this morning is, are we going off on our own path? And so we're going to ask three questions this morning. Why do we do that? What do we do when we go off on our own path, and what the result's going to be? So number one, we're going to look mostly at chapter 41, because chapter 40 was just, hey, new governor is here. And he's like, everything's going to be fine. That's chapter 40. So we're going to focus mostly on chapter 41. Number one, why? Why we go off on our own path? Well, there's a lot of bad reasons why we do things. So point number one could take the next 10 weeks if we wanted it to. But I'm just going to look at Ishmael this morning and point out a couple things that I see in his life. Number one, which is probably true in basically all instances that this happens, letter A is pride. Pride. Now, obviously, there's some pride in Ishmael's heart, but I do want to point out one passing statement as it goes by that I think that we're not supposed to miss. Look at verse number one of chapter 41. So Johanan just goes into Gedaliah's room. He says, hey, Ishmael's seeking your life. Let me kill him first. Gedaliah says, it's fine. It'll be fine. Leave it alone. Everything's fine. And it wasn't. Verse 1. It came to pass in the seventh month, Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, the son of Elishama, of the seed royal, and the princes of the king came into Gedaliah. We're not supposed to miss that. Ishmael is of the seed royal. There's a little debate about who Elishama is, because it says that he is the son of Nethaniah, the son of Elishama. They haven't told us that yet. And that seems to be significant and attached to the fact that he is of the seed royal. Some people think that it's back to chapter 36, you know, when Jehoiakim tore up the word and there was a lot of people in his room and they named a bunch of them. There's an Elishama there. But most commentators actually seem to go all the way back to genealogy of David. One of David's sons was named Elishama. And so the idea here is that regardless, one way or another, Ishmael is actually closer to the throne than Gedaliah would have been. He is closer to the line of the kings than the other people are. So Ishmael deserves to be king. It's his spot. Gedaliah is the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, the scribe. Who are you? What are you doing sitting as the governor of Israel? That's my spot. And so regardless of how much it was motivated, it's obvious that the Bible purposely places that statement there just prior to him killing the people before him. It tells us who they are. Every single time Gedaliah is brought up, it tells us who his dad and his grandfather are. Every time. We know who he is. He is the grandson of a scribe. And Ishmael is of the seed royal, and then he kills Gedaliah. That's not by accident. And so, as we look at that, his response is a little bit more common in a lot of the stories in the Bible. And it's also more common for us than we like to think it is. Because we will make a lot of decisions and we will go off on our own path because we think we deserve better than the path that we've been given. Well, I deserve to have, I should have, they shouldn't have. That's not their spot to have. Jesus gives a quick parable in Luke chapter 14 about how when, I gave it to you, I won't read it, but you can read it later, about when you're invited to a wedding. And when you go to special events, especially in the Jews' culture, there was always positions lined out. Like here, when we have a wedding, there is the head table, and then there's everyone else's table, right? If you're table one, that just means that you're closer to the front, but if you're in the back, it doesn't make a difference. There's the head table and everybody else. Well, for the Jews, there was like a hierarchy of tables. The bride and the groom were at the front, and if you were high official or you were very close to the family, you'd be very close to the table. And the lower you were in status or the farther away you were from the family, the farther away you'd sit. So, depending on how much you thought of yourself, might depend upon what seat you choose to sit in when you walk into the wedding. And Jesus says, when you go to a feast like that, don't sit in the highest seat and then be embarrassed to be asked to move down. Sit in the lowest seat, and then maybe someone will ask you to move up. And that's our primary decision most of the time. We want the highest seat at the table. We do. And God sometimes gives us a high seat at the table. Sometimes he gives us opportunities. Sometimes he gives us positions. Sometimes he does give us power. And sometimes he doesn't. But no matter what it is, we always want more because we always think we deserve more. And we will often get off on our own path with the pride in our heart that we deserve better than what we're handed. And then we will end up making some bad decisions. That's what the tribes of Israel did when they first walked into the promised land. God gave them all land. This is yours, this is yours, this is yours. And some of the tribes came up to them and said, Joshua, you know, we're a really great tribe. They even said that, we are great people. And this is just not enough for us. And he says, well, then take advantage of the amount that you do have. You got Canaanites living in your land. You got a bunch of trees you could chop down. Dan said the same thing. Joshua, this is not enough. But for them, they just picked up and moved. They just moved somewhere else. It's not good enough, so I'm going to go my own way. And that's what many of us will do. Pride, let her be. I got to keep moving. Because this one takes a little bit of time to sift out. Let her be. Secular thinking rather than spiritual thinking. By the way, our fellows are coming by. If you could take that little slip that you got when you came in this morning, just put your name on it and drop that in the offering plate when it goes around. We'll know who all's in Sunday school this morning. Maybe our Pathfinders class can have some semblance of an attendance. We'd appreciate that. Secular thinking rather than spiritual thinking. So is it only because he desired position? Probably, but there's a lot embedded in here that we often miss as well. So one thing that we'll notice very quickly is that Ishmael is in league with the Ammonites. Okay? Look at verse 14. Look at verse 14. He said unto them, dost thou certainly know that, I'm sorry, verse 14 of chapter 40. When Johanan, chapter 40, verse 14, had first given him the warning, Gedaliah, Ishmael's going to come and get you. He says, don't you know, verse 14, dost thou certainly know that Baalis, the king of the Ammonites, has sent Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, to slay thee? But Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, believed them not. Of course, it was true. Now, later on in chapter 41, when he does gather all these people, he carries them captive to Ammon. So he's in league with the Ammonites. And later on, in verse 15, he runs away to the Ammonites himself. So Ishmael's in league with Ammon. Now, that's interesting. Now, all the way back, and this is what's relevant, all the way back in chapter 27, this is a long time ago, Jeremiah, remember this story? Jeremiah stands up and he preaches a message with a yoke around his neck. And he says, you will be in bondage, you will be under the yoke of Babylon. That is true. Now, Jeremiah tells that message not only to Israel, and you got to listen very carefully to the next couple minutes because that's going to make this make more sense. Jeremiah says the message that Israel's going to be under the yoke of Babylon to Israel, but also to a bunch of other random nations who are in town. Edom, Moab, Ammon, and Tyre. Why? They're all in town talking to Zedekiah, and Jeremiah has to tell all of them that Babylon's going to beat them all. Babylon's going to win. So what's happening all the way back in chapter 27? Israel's getting together with all the local nations, Ammon, Moab, Edom, Tyre, and they're trying to all figure out how they can be successful against Babylon and not lose against Babylon. They're all making this league of nations. We are going to rise up against them. And Jeremiah has to tell them all, you're all going to fail. Okay, so put that aside. That was not that long ago. It was many chapters ago, but in the timeline, it wasn't that long ago. Now, Babylon comes, they destroy Jerusalem, everything falls apart, just like Jeremiah says that it would. And the Bible specifically says in this story, when Gedaliah was made governor, all the nations right around them heard about it. Ammon, Moab, and Edom. Now, why is that significant? Those are all the same nations that just a few years ago were all in town trying to make a big plan that we're going to all get together and overthrow Babylon. Now, so why is this so important? Because now it's not turning out well, and they're all mad. And who is this guy? We've never talked to him. He's sitting on the throne of Israel or whatever, being the governor. And so Ammon, one of the only nations in that little group, decides, we got to do something about it. We got to get rid of him. He is messing up our plans. And so he gets one of the princes, Ishmael, to assassinate Gedaliah, and Ishmael goes along with it. Now, why do I bring out all of that? Because you know what all that is? Politics. That's what it is. It's politics. Now, is politics evil? No. But watch, listen very carefully. It was not the answer to their problems. But Ishmael thought that it was. And he acted accordingly. They had a political issue. A nation is going to go to war against another nation. So what are we going to do? We'll have a conference. We'll figure it all out. Moab, Ammon, Edom, Israel, we're going to make this alliance, but new guy's in charge, and we didn't vote him in, and I don't know who he is, and so we got to get rid of him. So Ishmael, you got to kill him. Well, that makes the most sense. I think that's the most patriotic thing to do. And so Ishmael responds accordingly. He doesn't see this moment through the eyes of God, which is God put Babylon in charge. God is allowing Babylon to punish Israel, and now they're gone. And God says, just live in your land, build your houses again, Babylon's going to be okay, be in charge, and you're just going to have to be okay with it. And they say, no, we have to figure this out. And so he goes back to his political point of view, and he ends up doing something completely opposite of what God wants him to do. Now, like I said, is politics bad? No, someone has to be in charge. They're going to have meetings. They're going to make decisions. You know, there are going to be people who are governors and kings and princes. That's fine. But the problem was when we start looking at the world through our eyes instead of God's eyes, we end up making a completely different decision. I gave you a couple passages. You can go back and read them. 1 Corinthians 2 and James chapter 3. I encourage you to read both of those. But what both of those passages do is they make a contrast between man's thinking and God's thinking. Man has his wisdom. The natural man doesn't receive the things of the Spirit. They're spiritually discerned, he says in 1 Corinthians 2. The whole point of that passage is, if you do not have God's Spirit, you cannot think like God, you're going to think like you. And you don't think the same way that God thinks. James chapter 3 says the same thing. There is man's wisdom and there is God's wisdom. And they are often opposed to one another. So why do we go off on our own path? Yes, we can have an overly political view of the problem. And we start filling our lives with politics and thinking that that's the answer to our issue in our country. When really it's not. Could better laws be passed? Certainly. Could better decisions be made? Obviously so, but why are the bad decisions being made that are made? Why are the bad things happening that are happening? Why is the evil happening that's going on? Because of sin, because of spiritual problems. And so if we start to see the world through man's eyes instead of God's eyes, we're going to have a different evaluation of the problem. Sometimes we think money is the primary issue that we have. We think education is the primary issue that we have. And we get off on a lot of things that are really not how God is seeing the world. And so we see a problem where there's not a problem, or we see no problem where there is one. Earlier, the people saw no problem where there was one, and that's why they're in the mess that they're in. And now Gedaliah says, relax, Babylon's gone, we're done. And they saw a problem where there wasn't one. When we think our way, even though it makes sense to us, we often think completely opposite of what God wants us to. And then we end up trailing down somewhere, doing something, getting ourselves involved in something we never should have been, only because we stopped thinking like God did. And we started thinking like we did again. That takes me to number two. This point's a little quicker because we already know the story. Number two, what we are willing to do when we go off on our own path. What are we willing to do? Letter A, we will be willing to manipulate or destroy people who are in our way. We'd be willing to manipulate and destroy people who are in our way. So at the beginning of chapter 41, we read it earlier, Ishmael invites everyone to dinner so that they can be in a vulnerable position so that he can assassinate them. A bunch of people are in town mourning over the loss of Jerusalem, and so he mourns with them, and they go to see the governor who's dead. And then on the way there, he kills them. He manipulates their emotions and their trust in order to just get what he wants. The people around you are not pawns to be moved in order to make your plans come to fruition. But that's how Ishmael's treating people. Now listen, think about this for a second. What does Ishmael want? He wants the best for his country. But he's destroying his country in order to do it. He's destroying the governor. He's destroying the people. He's destroying the loyal people. These are good people. And they haven't even made any major decisions against him. They just don't agree with him. And so here he is, he says, but they're in my way because what I need to do is very important. And so because they're in my way, I need to get rid of them. He's very quickly willing to assassinate all these people. He doesn't see them as co-laborers in this new life that they're embarking on. Hey, Babylon's gone, let's rebuild our nation. This is not a bunch of extra hands with one goal we have in mind. No, these are people who are enemies. They're on the other side of the aisle, and so they must be destroyed. That's how he saw people. And listen, when we're so consumed with what we want to do, that's how we'll start seeing people. People are just obstacles in our path. People are just problems in our way. And I'd be perfectly happy if they were just gone. And sometimes we'll be willing to do things in order to do that. You start to get so focused on work and on your job, and then what you want to get is your project done and your stuff done, and then your coworkers stop being souls that you happen to be co-laboring with that God's put in your life. They start to be enemies that if they got fired tomorrow, you'd be perfectly happy with it. Well, they're gone. Was looking forward to that for years. That's who people become when we go on our own path. Because we're not seeing the world the way God sees them, and so then people are just obstacles to be getting rid of. I was thinking of the Christmas Carol this last week. And Ebenezer Scrooge, right? He's sitting in his tax house counting all his dollars. And they come in to ask him for a few shillings to give to the poor. And he says, well, are there no workhouses? Are there no prisons to put them? He said, well, some people would rather die than go there. Well, then they better do it and get rid of the surplus population, is what he says. And then, of course, his nephew comes in and he says, Christmas is a time where people see other people as fellow travelers in life rather than as problems to be gotten rid of. And they have this same conversation because that's how Scrooge saw the world. People were just obstacles in his path in order for him to get more money. And though we see Scrooge and his bent back and his long pointy nose and we think, I'm never like that, the problem is we can see people like that too. They're just obstacles in my path. And when I'm doing all my own way, that's the way that I'll treat people. Secondly, letter B, we'll use people as resources. We'll use people as resources. This is the opposite of this, but it's motivated by the same thinking. If people are willing or aren't willing to help me, I need to get rid of them. If people are willing to help me, then I'll keep them just because of what they can do for me. So watch, he's got all these people, 80, he kills all the people at dinner, Gedaliah and his men. They're gone. The next day, 80 men come into town. They're mourning. They want about Jerusalem falling. They want to talk to the governor. Ishmael gathers them. He says, we're going to go talk to the governor. He kills 70 of them. Now, look at verse 8. But 10 men were found among them that said unto Ishmael, slay us not, for we have treasures in the field of wheat and of barley and of oil and of honey. So he forbare and slew them not among his brethren. Hey, wait, stop. We have a lot of food. We have oil. We have honey. Don't kill us. We can give you stuff. Okay, sure. You can stay. Do you see the haphazardness in which he deals with people? He destroys them all because they're in their way. They're for Gedaliah, so we can't have them. And then 10 of them, oh, no, but I can give you some food. Okay, well, then you can stay. Charity, love, is giving without expecting return. However, we can become so self-focused in what we think is right. It's not just that we have our own, we want things for ourselves. We might just be focused on what we think is the best thing. And when we're not seeing the world the way that God wants us to, and we're seeing the world the way that we think things should go, we'll become so self-focused, we'll only allow people in our lives if they benefit us some way. They make us happy. They have all the same opinions that we do. They have the exact same agenda that we have. They like the exact same things that we like. And if you don't meet that description, then you are in my way, and so you can leave. But that's not Christ's love. And when we are so self-focused on our own devices and plans, this is what people will become to us. And lastly, letter C, then we will repeat missteps of the past. We'll repeat missteps of the past. The last point is really simple, and so I'll let this one take a moment. Look at verse number 9. It's a very odd passing statement. Verse 9. Now the pit wherein Ishmael had cast all the dead bodies of the men whom he had slain because of Gedaliah was it which Asa the king had made for fear of Baasha, king of Israel, and Ishmael the son of Nethaniah filled it with them that were slain. This is a random passing historical statement, almost completely without value. So he kills all these men and he throws them in a hole in the ground. And the Bible bothers to tell us what the hole is. Apparently, a long time ago, Asa dug the hole. Okay, like, did I need to know that he didn't just dig the hole? Is that important to the story? I think it is, to be honest. Why does he suddenly bring up Asa? This is an old, old, old story. When Asa was king, he was one of the first kings of Judah. When Asa was king, he fought against the Ethiopians, and he was scared. And what he did was he got all the treasure in Israel and he put it into the temple. And then he asked for God's help. And then he fought with the Ethiopians. And God gave him victory because he put all his stock in the Lord and not in the strength of men. Fast forward. Baasha, the king of Israel, because it's a divided nation, starts to fight against a nearby city of Judah, Ramah. And so he goes to fight with him. But this time, apparently his heart had changed. He takes all the treasure out of the temple and he gives it to Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, to bribe the king of Syria to break his treaty with Israel and instead make a treaty with him. And he's successful. He's successful at winning that battle, but he could have done so much more, a prophet comes to tell him, if he had continued to trust God instead of the strength of men. It was at that fortification that he made at Ramah that he must have dug this cistern, this pit. And the Bible brings up this story at this moment. Why? Well, it's interesting. It's in that story. Pastor quoted this verse just this morning. It's in that story where he took all his stock out of the Lord and he put it in men that the prophet comes and tells him to Asa, the eyes of the Lord are running to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong in the behalf of him whose heart is perfect toward him. But he says this, but herein thou hast done foolishly. Therefore, henceforth, thou shalt have wars. He says, you didn't make anything better for yourself. You put all of your thoughts and in the powers and the wisdom and the thinking of men, and it will cost you. And it's almost like an irony that here we have Ishmael taking all these dead bodies and throwing them in the same pit, making the same decisions that men did in the past, putting all of his stock and his thinking and his wisdom in men and not in God. And henceforth, Ishmael would have war. He didn't make things easier on himself. Here's the thing. God has given you plenty, plenty, plenty of instruction in his word. So much so that we are thoroughly furnished into all good works. But I think God does something else for us as well. Besides the examples that he abundantly gives in his word, he also allows you to see it in your own life. You see families destroyed. Daddy made the decision that work was more important, that another woman was better for his family. And you see other families destroyed because mommy wanted to go out and do her own thing, or mommy thought that that man understood her better, or that family's destroyed because money became the priority, or immorality they thought was going to be more pleasing to them than actually being faithful to their relationships. Whatever it is, God allows you to see those things in your life so that you're continually reminded, I should not go that way. But when we get so blinded by our own path, we end up trudging down the same path that everyone around us is, as if we do not see it. And here he is throwing the dead bodies in the same pit. Why? Because he's thinking the same way. And we will do the same thing. We will go down the same road and not even realize it until we fall off the cliff ourselves. And Ishmael did. That takes me to my last point, and we're almost done. I'll give them briefly, and then we'll be finished. Number three. What the result will be when we go our own path. What the result will be. Letter A, we will become the problem rather than the solution. After studying this, I saw a lot of the points I gave you as we just went through them. But I think what stuck out to me first was this statement. Look at verse 10 of chapter 41. And Ishmael carried away captive all the residue of the people that were in Mizpah, the king's daughters, all the people that remained in Mizpah, who Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, had committed to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, and Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, carried them away captive, departed to go over to the Ammonites. Ishmael wanted to free Israel from the bondage of Babylon. And how did he do it? By carrying them away captive. Like it's the irony is just completely lost on him as he chains up people and carries them away to a nearby city. He doesn't even see that he is just Babylon from the other end. He just fell into the other ditch. In order to save Israel, he destroyed Israel by killing the governor, killing the men, and putting them all in chains. You're not helping people. You're just bringing in different problems. When we get off on our own path, the problem is we're not making anything better. When we do things our way instead of God's way, the path that we take and the vision that we have for the future of our families, for the future of our jobs, for the future of our ministries, might cause old problems to go away, maybe, but all they'll do is introduce different problems. Because God is the one that gives us truth, and all we do is mess things up. And you might mess something up differently than the guy next to you, but you're still going to cause different problems because none of us have the wisdom that we need. And as we think differently and not like God, we'll just carry the people away captive in a different way. That's why it's so vital to think like God thinks, because if we're successful at changing anything, and if we do not do it God's way, all that we'll accomplish is introducing different problems. And we will become the problem, not the solution. I've seen that happen before. Somebody thinks not scripturally, and they cause an issue with their family or in their work. And then somebody else walks in and thinks not scripturally, but they think differently. And they end up swinging the pendulum the other way, and now we have the opposite problem, but it's still a problem because we're not seeing the balance that God's trying to give us from his word. Let letter B. We'll take it to the end. We'll be done. And we will destroy ourselves. Not only did he destroy his nation in his desperate attempt to fix it, he also destroyed his own life in his desperate attempt to fix it. At the last section, verse 14, so all the people that Ishmael had carried away captive from Mizpah cast about, that means they turned around, and returned, and they went unto Johanan, the son of Kareah. But Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, escaped from Johanan with 8 men and went to the Ammonites. That last section talks about how Johanan, the guy who warned Gedaliah, he comes and he takes a small army and he gets all the people back, and now Ishmael is a fugitive and runs away. You never hear from him again. So much for all the big plans you had, right, Ishmael? I think Ishmael did get away. But the point is, his captives were set free, his influence was lost, his big revolution failed, and now he's hiding somewhere. Whatever plans we have in our lives, if we do not do it like God wants us to, we are destined to fail. So we just have to trust that God knows what he's doing and just let him be God. That's what Ishmael should have done. He should have gone to Gedaliah and says, what do you need me to do? Jeremiah says that everything's going to be fine. God's word says everything's going to be fine at this point. We just need to serve Babylon for the time being. If he had trusted that that was enough, everything would have been okay. But he didn't. And he ended up destroying people because of it. Sometimes we think that we know better, but if we just trust that God knows what he's talking about and just let him be God, things will be a lot better for us. So don't be like Ishmael, and God will use you for it.